Welcome back to the March edition of the PigX podcast. As always, I'm your host, Delaney Howell. This month, we're going to be diving into the topic of the Swine Disease Reporting System, or more commonly known as SDRS. Throughout this episode today, we'll hear from three industry experts, including Giovanni Trevisan, Daniel Linares, and Guillerme Cesar. These three have plenty to share with us today around the development of how SDRS research came to be, important findings surrounding the basis of the research since its inception, and so much more. Let's jump in now, beginning with an introduction from Daniel.
I had 8 years of field experience working for a breeding stock company called Agroceres in Brazil. And in between, I did some training to MBA degree back home, PhD with Bob Morrison and Monsi Torremorel at the University of Minnesota. And when I was working between my field experience and the work up in Minnesota, what connected those two opportunities was a field-related research. And when Dr. Butch Baker retired here at Iowa State, they opened a position to fill that gap, right, to kind of have somebody working and expanding that field-based work. So that's how I ended up at Iowa State, and happy to be here since 2015 when we established our field-based team right here, right? A little bit about the SDRS is here at Iowa State and in the Midwest, we're surrounded by pigs and surrounded by very good veterinary diagnostic labs. So a lot of work being done and stored in the databases, and until we started at the SDRS, it was a frequently asked question we'd get from the field, which is, what are the labs getting? What are they seeing? What are the hot topics? And there was no such project to answer those questions in a near real-time fashion. And so that's where SDRS was born, was with the intent to quickly inform producers as quickly as what's going on today, right? As opposed to manually putting together databases, and by the time you get back to them, it's 6 months old and information will be not very consistent over time because different people will be trying to mine the database in different ways. So that SDRS comes to provide consistency and real-time access to what's going on in the far as swine health is concerned, right, through the lenses of the veterinary diagnostic labs.
Well, I'm Giovanni, and I did a DVM degree back in Brazil a couple of years ago, and then after I did graduate, I went for animal health and assurance and production in a company named Ciara, and it is a subsidiary of JBS business in Brazil. So I work in swine production and animal health for about 8 years, and then the need for and desire to understand a little bit more about data science, diagnostics, results and improve that knowledge brought me here to the Iowa State University. At the time that I got here, I came to do my graduate program under the mentorship of Daniel. And when I got here, they say, hey, we have this project here that we need to develop. It's getting funds to cover your scholarship here, so we need to do that. And that was the basic work that we started. The foundation of the SDRS was we started using diagnostic data for one pathogen that was PRRS-VIDAS, that was Iowa State University Laboratory Diagnostic. But with tremendous help from Dr. May and Dr. There was a connection between ISU and University of Minnesota with Dr. Jerry Torreson. We started to bring this together as a multi-institutional project that later on did expand and other four labs, that was South Dakota, Kansas, Ohio, and more recently Purdue. So today we get out this data and brought the SDRS from what was to be one pathogen, one lab. Now it's a multi-institutional, and we have other seven different pathogens in the database that we do report the data and disease diagnosed, those are from tissue case from Iowa State University. So long story short, have been working this project and learning a lot, its foundation here.
For myself, I got my DVM back in Brazil too, and also I got my master's in veterinary science. And then I started to work for an autogenous vaccine company in Brazil called Inata. And after work for a couple of years, I got the invitation here for Dr. Linares, Dr. Trevisan, and also Dr. Silva to work in the field dev group to do my PhD here at Iowa State University, what I'm currently doing right now, and got this challenge to coordinate the SDRS project with the help of Dr. Trevisan and also Dr. Linhares in being so far like a great project to work, and we could add a couple pathogens in the project throughout these years and also expand with more labs, as Giovanni mentioned.
Awesome. So Daniel, you mentioned a little bit about how SDRS came to light, but can you first walk us through what it is and where the project idea originally came from?
It's hard to pinpoint exact time and place because those things evolve, right? Started with just exploring the database here at Iowa State and doing some work with Mycoplasma, high pneumonia. And then once we start thinking, yeah, that's a good idea. And of course, when we say we, it's really a team effort, a lot of people involved, including the IT folks, the video leadership, and not mentioning names to kind of, I don't want to leave anybody behind. Giovanni mentioned a couple of very important early supporters. And this was funded by Schick. That's important, right? So Schick, everything that got started in 2017, it got Schick support, and it continues to get support from Schick. And it started when it became the SDRS. It's like Giovanni said, it started with first virus from Iowa and Minnesota. And at that time, it was also established what we call the advisory group, which is a body of people with boots and hands in the ground, right? So we want to see what they pick their brain on based on what they see, what they hear, what are the meanings of the different alerts, different trends, different detection patterns that we get at the SDRS. So we run the findings monthly by the advisory group, and we're fortunate to have them donating their time to help us understand what's behind the changes in patterns of detection. And we share that, of course, in the reports and PDF reports and the audio report that we do every month. Anything else to add, Giovanni, on that foundation?
No, that was exactly it. There was this collaborative work, and the pro of the core foundation for the project was, well, let's get some diagnostic data here, and let's look for what app information is behind there that we can start to understand, see what's the trends in terms of diagnostics and how that's occurring in the field, and report that information for producers and veterinarians that could use that to make decisions in the field and understand those trends, you know, on a real-time basis. As Daniel mentioned before that was, you need to go for the lab. Now you have this platform that reports, and everything that has been done in the project so far, that is this tremendous contribution of the advisory group. Sometimes we have brilliant ideas that we say that's going to revolutionize, we go for the advice group and say that doesn't help us in the field, go this way, that this is really going to add value for us, and this is the way that we can better see the data. So the moving need of the project and keeping the expanding and exploring has the support from this group of key expert leaders.
So as you look at the SDRS process or the reporting system, you have a lot of different, I don't know if categories or classification is the right word, but you have the participant labs, data retrieving, data collection, et cetera. Can you walk us through the flow of how that is supposed to work into the final report?
That's a very good question. How the project gets the data? So basically, we go for these labs that they decide to participate in the project, and they share with us the testing and testing results for the pathogens that are reported. So we do report detection if a case was positive or negative, and that's the information that comes to us. So we have this data that's shared on real time, no information about producers, no information about the vet, no information about the farm is shared with the project. That information doesn't come with us, and all the information that comes is really anonymized data. We collect this data from the VDLs. There is a bunch of scripts and IT tools that run in the background to be able to keep this running on a real-time basis. But once we have this data organized, now we are able to run that information, compile reports. And this report we run through our advisory group, a preliminary report in the middle of the month. And that they can see the information of what's coming out, what's the current trends of detections for those pathogens there, and then they provide a feedback for us about what they are seeing in the field. So that's the beauty of this process, combines diagnostic data plus information from field, from people that have the boots on the ground, and that combining a final report that built it for all the industry. As all the data is anonymized, no information about producers, no site information, no address, nothing comes to us, we report those information on a free of charge for all the ones that want to receive the report. That goes out through the email. We have podcasts that report information. The Swine Health Information Center, that is a sponsor of the project, posts the PDF reports in their website. And on our website, we have the PDF report, the audio reports, and the dashboard that has further capability if you want to go there and explore this data by different farm types or different states. You can do that there.
And as you look at the data that's being collected, Giovanni, how is the data accessed and how is it protected? You mentioned it was anonymous, but how does that work from a producer or a farm level?
That's a very good question. We don't know any producer or any farm information. That information doesn't come for the video. All of that information is protected by the labs and stay with the labs. So once it hits us, the information that comes for us is the test and the test result for those samples that they receive. That's the only piece of data that comes here to the report that we are able to compile and being able to distribute back for the producers.
As you look at the SDRS advisory group, Daniel, can you tell us more about the importance of the project for each of the advisory group members?
For the project, the importance is for of having the advisory group is that idea of giving meaning of the patterns and findings and changes in patterns and findings, right? So they help us understand if detection of first, for example, is going up because at specific points in time in the state, is it because of more monitoring? Is it because of more activity in terms of outbreaks? Is it because of emergence of new strains? Things like that. So they help us to understand the patterns of that, of what the data is showing. We have here over 200 algorithms looking for changes in patterns, and then whenever we find a signal, we run those by them and they help us understand. Now for them, what is the value for them? We believe that the value is the information. Because we have to ask them of those particular patterns ahead of the reports, there, of course, they have the advantage of knowing the pattern before everybody else gets to see it because we compile their answers, put it in the report. So they are the first ones in the industry who actually know what are the trends and the pathogen, different pathogen activities that we monitor.
And as you mentioned, you're really trying to collect a lot of different data points. They're anonymous data points, but the database that you've been building through this process has millions of different PCR cases going all the way back to 2002. Can you talk a little bit about some of the summary of findings that you've had since this project has been created?
Yeah, sure. We have 8 endemic swine pathogens in the report that we monitor like monthly, as Daniel and Giovanni mentioned. And we have a couple of findings from all of them that repeats every year. We see a pattern, for example, for the PERS and also the enteric coronavirus like PED, Delta, and also TGE. We see a seasonal component for them, except for TGE that we don't have cases, that is positive cases that are going on. But for the other three, as I mentioned, the two enteric coronavirus and PERS, in the winter, we have an increased activity of these pathogens that we can detect in the PCR data that we have in our database. And also when it goes through the summer, the activity of these pathogens decrease. Also, one pattern that we have for all of them is the wind to market category that we also monitor that is always above the South Farm category when we see in terms of positivity of the PCR of the specific pathogens that I mentioned. And also for PERS, we see a pattern that when we start to increase the wind to market category, it predicts an increase in South Farm. So when you start to see 1 month that the positivity of the wind to market category increased in the PCR cases, in the following month, usually we have an increase in the South Farm positivity. So some kind of connection between these two specific categories that we monitor in this report. And also for the other four pathogens that we have, that is influenza A virus, also Mycoplasma pneumoniae, PCV2 and PCV3, we also have some highlights for them. For influenza, for our audience to know, we have a big seasonal pattern that we see every year, that we see an increased number of positive cases for influenza in the fall and also in the spring that we see. And usually when we run this information to our advisor, they think that what might be causing that is this change, this abrupt change in temperature that we see in these two specific seasons that might contribute to this increased positivity of this specific pathogen. For Mycoplasma, we have a recent highlight that we noticed in the last year, in 2023, that we increased the number of PCR cases that were submitted in all these VDLs in almost 30%. And when we run this information with the advisory queue, well, they mentioned that most of the production system, a lot of them, are going through Mycoplasma elimination. So they start to submit more PCRs, mainly deep tracheal swabs, that they use to identify if they still have positive gills or positive cells in the farm and monitor that and this increase the number of cases. And for PCV2 and PCV3 that we recently added in the report too, we start to notice a pattern of increased submissions of processing fluids for these two specific pathogens. It seems that the industry is using these specimens specifically a lot to monitor these two pathogens. And PCV3 is the only pathogen that we have in our database comparing with the other seven, that the activity of positive PCRs in the cell farms are always above the winter market category. So this is a pattern for PCV3 that we have that is specifically for the PCV3.
Yep, there is some very important information out there is that when you look for diagnostics and detection, one thing that we always think about is how much of these pathogens out there, how much is burning or swine those. But for one specific pathogen that is TGE, we do not have detection of that since 2021. So it's a great news that maybe we got rid of that, or if it's out there, it's in a very, very low prevalence there.
Despite thousands of tests, right, every year.
Right, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Since the last case, I think we had over 130,000 cases that were submitted. This is cases, so within each case could have multiple PCRs that were tested, and none of them were positive.
And the other thing we've been monitoring is the epi curve of specific strains. One example is the lineage 1C.5. Right, formerly known as the 144 lineage 1C variant, which is relatively highly virulent compared to others. And so we track that and report that monthly in terms of number of cases associated with it and do that by state and age group to help the industry understand how that specific strain is being detected, right, over time and space.
And at the end of the day, all the information that is here reported provides this benchmark of comparison tool for the producers that they can look at and see what's happening, and they can also look for their internal data that they have in their own system and company and see, I'm seeing this increase in this lineage 1C.5 in my state. Is that happening in my production system or is it somewhere else? If it's somewhere else, they can take that information and advantage, maybe it's time I buy security and buy containment practice here to avoid the disease entering my farm, but once entered, that spreads across the other farms in my system.
And so another component of the database and from the report is how you go about confirming tissue diagnosis with the ISU VDL lab. Can you explain the difference of comparing the data with the PCR component of the project and also the importance of reporting this information?
For the specific disease diagnosis, there is a difference in these cases because these are tissue cases that were submitted in the ISU VDL. And for these cases, a diagnostician, they take a look not only in the clinical story of the case, but also all the tests that were performed there. For example, PCR, bacteriology, virology that was performed in this specific case. And also they look to the slides to see any histological lesion. And based on all this information, they assign a confirmed diagnosis code that we call DX code here in the ISU VDL. So this is really a confirmed case, not only PCR positive, that only is a DNA or RNA that you detected in a specific sample. For that, it was an evaluation for a diagnostician and confirmed that the disease was there or not. And using this data for monitoring in the SDRS, there is a great difference, because in this confirmed case, when we have an increased number of a specific pathogen, for example, for PERS, if you are seeing that is an increase in this number of confirmed cases, it really means that we are having disease activity in the field in terms of clinical signs, not only PCR positive cases that might represent that the virus DNA RNA was there, but in this case, it's really clinical signs that were going on in the field.
The database also includes some PERS ORF sequence 5. What's the importance of having that information in the report specifically?
That's a very good question. For PERS virus, is the only pathogen that we do have sequenced so far in the project. And when you do sequencing, it's because you are looking to characterize that virus in terms of what the genetic component out there. The first is, by having that sequence, you can understand what is the frequency of usage of PERS MLV vaccines in the field by the PERS MLV vaccines that are recovered. But most importantly, you are able to understand of those PERS virus PCR that are positive, how much of those are coming from wild type PERS virus strain. And the sequencing providing us that information, and we can understand what the geographic location of that, where they are occurring, which one are spiking up and being detected with more frequency. That was the one example when this lineage 1C.5 or the LFLP144 variant was first described at the end of 2020, causing some problems in Minnesota and came to Iowa. At that time, we were able to quickly look into the data based on the feedback that came from the advisory group that asked us. So we went there, looked for that, and could understand that there was this increased number of sequence in this cluster that was being recovered. And after that, it becomes a large problem, but we were able to quick communicate and raise awareness in the industry of something that was going on. Thinking about the importance of being able to understand if a PERS virus wild type strain has been seen before and when, now we are in the process of establishing and developing a capability that is being led by a grad student here that is Sirigita, where producers could take their own sequence and blast that to the sequence that are on the SDRS database. And that would tell you two information. The sequence that is being compared that has been seen before, when and where, and what lineage in the LFLP was those sequences that has been seen classified as. So it would provide this background information in terms of epidata of what I am having in my farm, is only me or these other farms also that are facing that problem. So that's the information that we can capture in terms of PERS virus sequence and is current present in the database.
And as you look at the main findings and the foundation for this project, what are the tools that are available specifically for veterinarians and producers?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are many tools that they can use, but the most one that everyone uses is the PDF report that we release monthly. And you can read all the findings that we have for each of these 8 pathogens that we monitor. But let's give an example, like, hey, Guilherme, but I don't have time to read one full report. I don't want to have a paper copy of that. So we also have the audio reports, so the podcast that we go through the main findings that we have each month. And also we have the YouTube videos that have all these main findings summarized with a guest that we always invite each month to discuss these findings and also some additional information regarding all of these 8 pathogens that we have monitoring the report. And other tools that we have available for the producer and also for the veterinarians are the dashboards that we have online at the SDRS website, that you can go there and look specifically to the pathogen that you are looking for the number of cases, and it's an interactive dashboard that you can split this data by category, by the specimen that was submitted for the laboratory. So you can kind of play with all this data from the SDRS and get the information that you want to take a look. And finally, if you read one of the reports or also you listen from one of these monthly findings and you don't understand something, We also have the education material in the YouTube channel of the SDRS that you can take a look that explain each of the charts that we have in the report and also all the information that we compile and report back to the industry that you can use.
If your producer wants to receive the report or a VAT, they can touch base with us and we are going to release them in the receiving list, and they can receive the report every time that it's released through the email inbox. And that's free. There is no charge for receiving the report.
Free, no strings attached.
Thank you again to Daniel, Guilherme, and Giovanni for joining us to share their incredible insight into the topic of SDRS. Thanks for tuning in this month, and be sure to hit subscribe so you're notified next month when another timely episode is dropped. Until next time, I'm your host, Delaney Howell, and this has been the PigX Podcast.
PigX is a national podcast hosted by the Pig Livability Project partners at Iowa State University, Kansas State University, and Purdue, and supported by the Iowa Pork Industry Center. For more information on the project, head to www.piglivability.org, or to inquire directly with questions regarding the project, email ipic@iastate.edu. PigX. Ideas in the swine industry worth sharing.